and welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Jason Weber, one of Toledo's finest journalists and writers. Jason's career has seen him as the house publicist for Insane Clown Posse, the editor of Toledo City Paper, and now he's writing for the Toledo Blade. Jason, it's so great to have you today on the show. I appreciate you coming out and talking with us today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So let's just go ahead and dive right in. I want to talk a little bit about your career as a journalist. How did you get started in that?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a writer. And journalism, I just had a knack for it. I got started when I was in high school. I was growing up in Longview, Washington. And my hometown newspaper, the Daily News, had a page written by and for teenagers called Up Next.
Oh, cool.
And they would hold out these tryouts for to become a teenage reporter for this Up Next page. So I did. I was 17, and I got picked. And so I spent my senior year in high school writing professional journalism articles for my hometown newspaper.
Oh, that's amazing.
And after I graduated from high school, and I enrolled in a community college, and the newspaper called me and asked me if I would become the town film critic. And so I did. I was one of the last film critics basically ever and from the mid-90s, I think we started in 96, and it went all the way up to 99. So I did that for a couple of years.
Okay.
Moved to Detroit in January of 99, got my journalism degree from Wayne State University. And then that's when I moved to Toledo the first time, was in January of 2004. I accepted the position at Toledo City Paper. And I got hired at that City Paper as the calendar guy, and kind of on the lower rung. But I just had a burning desire to write and everything. So I got promoted to staff writer, and then I got promoted to editor. And I did a little sojourn in politics and also the music industry, and then I got back into journalism just a couple years ago when I got hired by the Blade.
Oh, very cool.
And yeah.
Do you have any of the early articles or early stories that you might have broken either with Up Next or as a critic that really stick out to you as like, this was the moment where I really realized that I could do this and that this was what I wanted to do?
Well, I knew I wanted to be like a rock journalist. I knew I wanted to like write for Rolling Stone or one of those magazines. When this would have been in 97, I met Chris Novoselic from Nirvana.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and that was cool. That was my first big, big music story. And it during those early days, I got to meet Chris Novoselic. I got to write reviews on just a lot of cool films and a lot of crappy films as well.
What was one of the worst films that you wrote a review about?
Well, it wasn't the worst film I saw, but the review that got me the most attention in my hometown was a negative review I gave to Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Women hated me for that review. Yeah, I got everywhere I went.
It got them talking, though, didn't
it? Oh, it did. It did. But everywhere I went, my picture was in the paper with my column. And everywhere I went, women just were just like, you don't like Romy and Michelle. I am not listening to a word you have to say in your column.
You lost all credibility with half your audience, didn't you?
I said in the article, I love the soundtrack. I did. But I described Romy and Michelle as being a 90-minute blonde joke with no punchline. And I remember that well. And that did not endear me to many people, unfortunately.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, yeah. if you're writing, especially opinionated stuff, if you're writing opinion, you're always going to have, no matter how much you try to cater it to a wide audience, you're always going to have a lot of people who disagree, right?
Oh, yes.
And that's just sort of, I guess, probably something in your line of work, especially, that you've had to come to terms with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. How has a career in journalism surprised you along the way from any sort of like expectations you might have had going into it?
Well, it's always been full of surprises because just to watch how much it's changed and evolved over the years. I mean, back in 94, when I first got started, newspapers were still very much a dominant means of communication. Print was still ruling, and magazines were still ruling. But now in 2024, newspapers, I mean, the Blade is still a very, very valuable medium in Toledo. That name, you say the words the Blade, people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But of course, the Blade has had to adjust with the times. Mm-hmm. We now only going to press 2 days a week with a print edition. But, you know, the news is still being updated in 24/7 real time on Blade.com.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and everything. They, so.
A lot of what used to be print is absolutely just digital now.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And, you know, in smaller snippets, I get emails from the Blade multiple times a day with, instead of, you know, the full paper in front of you, you get bits and pieces of it at a time.
Yeah.
People have a hard time digesting a lot of material at once. So
sure.
It makes sense that they're breaking it up like that. And it's good that they've adjusted to, you know, the shift in the markets.
Mm, absolutely.
So I know you said you always wanted to be a rock journalist. Is there anything that, any story that you covered along the way that was just like way out in left field for you that you look back and you kind of have to laugh? Like, how did that end up on my desk?
Not really. I mean, I try to be as pliable and as diverse as far as the stuff I can cover, mm-hmm. as much as I can. Certainly, there have been a lot of crazy stories. You know, I got to interview a lot of really cool people and a lot of crazy people too.
Oh,
I think the worst interview I ever did was with Gallagher.
Okay.
Gallagher, who was probably the most bitter and just depraved man I ever interviewed. I just wanted to give the guy a hug because he just was so bitter about his life and everything. And so yeah, after I interviewed him, I remember announcing to my co-workers, I said, I think I need a Karen Silkwood shower right now.
Oh, it's, I believe it.
Yeah.
Was it just like interview about his career? And
he was just, yeah. It was about his career and how Gallagher felt that he never got the props he deserved and everything. And he just felt very, very overlooked. And just, he was just a very, very bitter man.
Right.
And yeah, he was not very pleasant to interview.
That's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate to hear. Out of an infinite pool of curiosity, every time we've spoken, we've brought up at least a little bit the fact that you were a publicist for the Insane Clown Posse for, what, 5 years?
5 years.
5 years. That just sounds wild to me. I mean, I had a phase growing up where I listened to their music a lot. I haven't listened to them in a long time, but I listened to them, Twisted, a lot of the other groups that were in that group. Do you have any stories that you're able to tell about that or any insights into how that experience was in your life?
Sure. I'm actually writing a book about it right now.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. It's I'm working on the big ICP book, which I'm 10,000 words into it now. So that's coming out next year. Stories from the book. There's many. The story I always tell is the time when I was working with ICP out in LA on a show that they had for the Fuse Network called Insane Clown Posse Theater. And this one night I had to, Violent J said, I'm going to go to bed early, so I'm going to be at the hotel. Get me, he asked me to get him some food and bring it to his hotel room. So I'm like, okay, no problem. Meanwhile, Shaggy Tudo and one of ICP's assistants is having dinner at this 24-hour diner in LA. And so I get Violent J some chicken wings and a salad. And I said, all right, I'm going to take this back to Violent J's room. And so I get up to Violent J's room, knock, 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 and I'm waiting. Knock, 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 I'm waiting. And then I hear something shuffling behind the door, but I don't know what it is, but there's something there. Finally, I'm just like, knock, knock, knock. And the door cracks open and it says, I said leave it outside the door, I'm naked. And when he did that, it echoed all the way down the hallway.
Everybody in the entire hotel heard, probably.
Yes, exactly. And sure enough, a lady opened the door and was like, what was that?
Yeah, that's really funny.
So yeah, when I almost saw Violent J naked, that was kind of hilarious.
So how did that whole experience in general sort of change you as a writer, change you as a thinker?
Oh, in many, many ways. I mean, the 5 years I spent working for ICP were wonderful, but they were also challenging as heck. Rock and roll is not an easy world to live in. You know, it's but it changed me a lot because I don't know, it changes your outlook on life a little bit. You know, you enjoy when you've been in that world where everything you're under so much pressure in rock and roll and politics, and I've worked in both. But so when you step away from it and everything, you just enjoy life a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really affect my writing that much or anything. No, but it did affect my humanity.
I believe it.
And
that's interesting that you drew a parallel between rock and roll and politics, both being very fast-paced, very demanding industries, and something that people would think would be opposite. I mean, rock and roll is like one of the things people think about is anti-establishment, you know, having fun. And then you got politics on the other hand. What from those two did you find really sort of stuck out as like, wow, these two are much closer to each other than I thought?
Egos.
Egos?
Egos, 100%. Mm-hmm. Every rock star has an ego, and every rock star needs an ego, and every politician has an ego. Mm-hmm. The ones who say they don't have egos and that it's all, you know, and that, you know, they're doing all this for, you know, love of country or whatever and everything, there's still a part, it still requires a certain level of ego to put yourself out there as a politician in a big way. When I worked for Carly Finkbeiner for a year, and I got a crash course in that.
Okay,
you know, it was an interesting time.
No, with writing, you kind of have to leave your ego at the door, don't you? A little bit.
As a writer, you do. Yeah, absolutely.
Beyond your journalist aspect of your life, what other kinds of writing do you enjoy?
I did go through a big poetry phase.
Okay.
I did. Never published any poetry, but I did go through a phase.
Did you do any performance poetry along the way? Or?
Yeah, when I was living in Dayton, I did. Okay. I did a lot of open mic stuff and everything.
Okay, very cool. I know we have a really thriving open mic poetry scene here, so I don't know if you had ever been involved in any of that or
not in Toledo. Not in Toledo. My writing in Toledo mostly is just focusing on The Blade and then also my books. I've been writing a series of memoirs.
Okay.
And so I prefer the right now. The medium of memoir.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So that sort of segues into what I wanted to ask you about next. We have a cultural pop icon that has been a huge influence on your life, right? And who actually led you to write your first memoir.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit about Prince and how Prince became sort of this this launch into writing your books?
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in a very, very conservative religious household. My family was a Southern Baptist, and we were the kind of family that, you know, my parents would like hide the liquor whenever people would come over. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very, very, very sterile family. There wasn't really a lot of rock and roll or anything in my house. But when I was a kid, I saw Prince on TV, and he just fascinated me because I couldn't tell if he was black or white. I couldn't tell if he was straight or gay. I couldn't tell any of this, and he just fascinated me and a lot of people. But when I got a little bit older and I listened to a little bit of Prince, I was noticing in his lyrics that he was always talking about either sex or God. Those are the two things he was singing about, and that collision between the sacred and the profane just really fascinated me as a young man, because I felt the same war within myself. Mm-hmm. On one hand, I'm being raised by a Christian family, even though I had severe doubts about the faith I was being raised in, and then here's Prince singing about God in a way that I wasn't hearing at church,
right.
And that was fascinating to me. It was my own religious and sexual confusion and curiosity and everything stuff that led me to becoming a Prince fan.
Okay. And then, you know, we had the pleasure of talking once before about your books, and you had mentioned that finding out about his death, which was a moment in pop culture history that affected a lot of people.
Yeah.
But you said that was sort of an aha moment for you.
Yeah.
That you needed to get your writing projects done before it was too late, kind of. You needed to sort of, you put it better. So you started Purple Bananas shortly after that, right?
Yes. I actually started writing Purple Bananas the day that Prince died.
Okay.
The first thing I did when I found out that Prince had passed away, after I got my composure, I went and I wrote a poem, actually, the same day that he passed away. And it was called "You Never Knew Me, But You Were My Best Friend." And I just banged it out and everything. That poem actually got picked up, and it got published in an anthology of Prince poetry a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's
got
to be really cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Really cool feeling.
Yeah, it was cool. So I started with the poem, and then I just started writing just about what happened that day, because I just remember exactly where I was, what I was doing, everything on the morning that Prince died back in 2016. So I just started writing, and I just realized that if it wasn't for Prince, I might not be here, because when I was 17 years old, I was contemplating self-harm, and a Prince song actually inspired me to put down the knife.
Okay.
You know, so. So yeah, my connection with Prince is very, very deep, and it goes a long way.
Yeah, it's amazing. You hear in those moments the things that, you know, keep us on the right side of the brink. So
yes,
that's amazing to hear. So that first book, can you tell us a little bit about it? What's you know, what you ended up pouring into it? What the stories in it tell us about you as a man? It is Purple Bananas, right?
Yep. Purple Bananas. Purple Bananas basically is just it is a memoir. It starts with my adoption, because I'm adopted, and it basically just goes through my entire life up until 2017. No, it was 2019, I believe, when I went to Paisley Park the first time.
Okay,
I talk about growing up in a messed up house. I talked about my early exposure to Prince, talked about when my parents finally relented and said, okay, you can listen to Prince, when I was like 16.
You're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of that. So, you know, I started collecting his albums and everything. And so I just, it goes through me buying his albums and how they affected me. And so it just goes through basically my entire life as a Prince fan.
Okay.
So I talk about going to see Prince with Violent J from ICP. That was cool. You know, it's my life through the lens of being a Prince fan.
Oh, very cool. Through that purple lens.
Yep.
Basically, yep. And then recently you released your second memoir book, right?
Yes.
And it's a little bit different, but it does touch on some of the same subjects with your upbringing and
right.
But more so who you became because of some of those things, right?
Yeah. This was my second book. It's called Mr. Fantastic Bastard, excuse the language. But yeah, this book was my attempt to kind of get in touch with my inner Henry Miller or William Burroughs. I was trying to write my version of Tropic of Cancer, my version of Naked Lunch. It was where I was, because those books were both very much confessional novels. Mm-hmm. They were about sex. They were about drugs. They were about basically sins mm-hmm. that those authors had committed against humanity or whatever. So I basically was doing the same thing with my second book. Mm-hmm. I talk about relationships I've been in where I didn't act very, very well. It's basically me trying to atone for a lot of sins right. I committed.
Reconciling for some of your choices in life along the way.
Yes. And also to serve as people ask me, you know, why would you put yourself out like that? It's like, well, because if somebody reads this, they're going to realize that, look, I went looking in all the wrong places for personal fulfillment. Right. You don't have to go there.
Right. Right. I think we all do have parts of our lives where maybe we're not happy about them. Maybe we're not, you know, super proud about the people that we were,
right.
But they were informative. They were, you know, they were those moments that made us who we are, and they taught us important lessons along the way.
Yes.
And sometimes we just need to look at them, address them, and move on for our own, you know, our own sake. So that's really good. I read through that book and it was exactly what that was. It was like, oh, I think I told you the first time we met, I told you that there was moments where I wanted to give you a hug and moments where I wanted to hit you.
Yes. There you go.
So,
you
know, mission solved if that's how you were dealing with them. So.
And that's life. You know, I mean, sometimes we're heroes, sometimes we're villains.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you have any advice for anybody who wants to be a journalist or anybody who wants to write about life or just write in general?
If you want to be a writer. First of all, everybody can write a book. I get asked that all the time. I'm like, how did you write a book? It's easy. It's because the hardest part is actually sitting down and actually just doing the work. Because mm-hmm. there's nothing more tedious than writing a book. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 10,000 words into my current book, and I'm just like, is this ever going to end? Is this ever going to end? I just want to. I know where I want to go at the end, but mm-hmm. it makes you understand why people rely on AI and ChatGPT to write some of their stuff but you know, at the same time you do that, it takes all the humanity out of it. Right. So what are you gonna do?
Right.
But no, my advice is to one, don't write on a laptop, because when you write on a laptop you have so many distractions and everything. I actually write on an electric typewriter myself. It's called a free write.
Oh, very cool.
And I use that, and because you have to get into a writing flow. Mm-hmm. And also, word of advice too, don't edit as you write. Just write. Leave the editing for later. If you come back, like for example, I was writing this morning, and I couldn't remember the name of a venue where I saw ICP in like 20 years ago. So I'm just writing dot dot dot. Insert venue later.
Yep. Bold it or highlight it so you know you come back.
Exactly.
And just move on.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
As a fantasy science fiction writer, I do that all the time where I'm like, I don't know what I want to name this town. I don't know what this character's name is going to be.
Exactly.
Instead of getting stuck on this for 7 weeks, I'm just moving on.
Yes. That's
because
what you got to do.
You got to get it down before you can polish it.
And there you go.
So
that's my advice. And just also just for everybody to remember, everybody's got a book in them. Mm-hmm. My one of my heroes was this writer named Quentin Crisp, who wrote a wonderful book called The Naked Civil Servant. And Quentin Crisp said that everybody has their own story to tell. Mm-hmm. So everybody should write a book. Mm-hmm. Tell your story. Somebody out there wants to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, even if you think it's mundane or boring, sometimes some of the most mundane events in life are the things that people can connect with the most.
And absolutely.
If you have your own spin on it, it's no longer mundane. It's you know, a real life, living, breathing thing that you never know who might take some value out of it.
Absolutely.
So yeah. Right now with The Blade, you do a lot of like art stuff, don't you?
Right.
Proud to be of Rust and Glass. You know, we celebrate everything creative here. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in the Toledo area art scene that you're just always really impressed by?
Oh man, so much. I love I am friends with like Contron and some of the mural artists and everything. I love just seeing all the murals.
It's really cool. I was just out of state for a while, and while my hometown had some cool murals, it's nothing like here. I mean, everywhere you turn, there's another masterpiece right in your face.
Yes. So I love that. I love all the public arts. My daughter is really into art and everything stuff. So we always go around looking at the public art. No, the I wish we had more art galleries. I miss some of the galleries like Space 237, mm-hmm. some of those galleries that mm-hmm. are no longer around. No, I love just how much creativity there is in the city. You know?
It's really cool to see, and it's really cool to be a small part of. And
yes.
I'm sure for you reporting on it, it's incredible to meet new people, and I'm sure you're surprised every time. Like, oh, you're here too. That's amazing.
Yes, it's I love what I do. I really do. It's I mean my job is to track down cool people and write about them, and that's a great thing to do.
I love it. If you had to pinpoint something, I know the writing process isn't easy. I know self-discovery isn't easy. What have been some of the biggest challenges you faced along the way from starting out as a high school journalist when you're 17 to now having two books, a third on the way, mm-hmm. you know, to being an established journalist? What have been some of the challenges that you faced, Ben?
Well, self-doubt, also self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, writers tend to be their own worst enemies. I think creatives in general tend to mm-hmm. be their own worst enemies. You know, we have imposter syndrome really, really bad. We think that our stuff isn't good enough. You know,
and it's way too close to home. But yeah, that's 100%.
Absolutely. So that's my biggest challenge.
Okay.
Is just my own tendency to self-loathe and self-sabotage.
Okay. Have you found any ways to sort of fight through that, or you still deal with that on a regular basis?
I still deal with it on a regular basis, but I do push through because sometimes I'll go through my sometimes I will just read my own stuff and just realize it's like, you know what, this actually is pretty good. You know, it's mm-hmm. just go back and just read your own stuff, but try to read it with a open mind.
Right.
You know, to where you can say it's like, you know, that's a pretty good line. Right. You know, so
read as if you're reading somebody else's work or if somebody else was reading your work. And
yeah, try to take you out of the equation. Oh, yeah. You know, take your
easier
ego
said
out of it.
Than done. But it's definitely an important tool to be able to develop, because you might have a brilliant line. Yep. But all you see is the crap that's around it.
Yes.
So you can fix that crap, but like you're doing right. You got that, you know, that good paragraph or that good chapter, or you know, sometimes the entire book is almost where it needs to be, and you don't even see it because you can't push past your own doubts and your own negativity. So it's definitely a good tool to develop.
Yes.
If there was anyone who wanted to sort of catch up on your writing progress or see where you're going next, do you have anywhere where people can follow along with you? Or
yeah, I have a blog at patreon.com, patreon.com/purplebananas.
Okay.
So I'm what I'm doing now is I'm writing my ICP book, I'm posting the unedited chapters on my blog.
Okay.
So people can actually read my I can actually follow along with me with my creative process.
You did something similar with your Mr. Fantastic Bastard? You did this a similar thing where you blogged while you were writing, or
yes,
or you took a lot of your old blog posts and expanded on them, right?
Yes, that's basically it. Yeah,
that's very cool. So it's somewhere where people can actually go and read a lot of good material, then, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Very cool. And what was the extension of the URL for that again?
Patreon.com/purplebananas.
Beautiful. Well, I hope somebody will listen to this and get as inspired as you get by Prince. And I hope people will go check out your blog and see what you're up to.
I hope so, too.
So awesome. Well, Jason, it was great again to talk to you today. Looking forward to seeing what's next for you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care, sir.
All right. Thank you.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. From reporting as a 17-year-old in high school to working with the Insane Clown Posse for nearly 5 years, Jason's background in journalism and his love for rock and roll is deep and varied throughout his life. We're lucky to have him reporting in the Toledo creative scene and championing for the arts right here in Northwest Ohio. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.